How many of you have ever heard of Gideon before? All right. Now, and I know some of you saying, who is Gideon? That guy that puts Bibles in motel rooms, right? Yeah. No, that's the Gideons organization. Gideon was a farm boy. Yeah, he was just a regular guy that lived in Israel, and his daddy had a farm, and he farmed, and he did all the stuff dad said to do. And he became a national hero. Yeah, imagine that. Like on the title on your outline, From Zero to Hero. Yeah. Now, what the Lord wants us to know is that that can be our life. And I know I hear some of you say, man, there's no way that God could use me like that in any really significant way. Because, you know, I'm just really not smart enough, or I'm not sophisticated enough, or I don't have enough education, or whatever reason, I'm from the wrong side of the tracks. I'm not the right color, you know. I mean, whatever it might be that you might have as a reason why God could never use you like that, let me just say to you, don't bet on it. Because God seems to be able to use almost anything. I'm just saying to you that God's not nearly as picky as we are. It just is really that simple. We think we have to be some kind of magnificently wonderful, great, supercharged person with a wonderful personality and great credentials and lots of education before God could really do anything through us. And I'm just here to tell you today and use Gideon to show you that that's not true at all. That God can use some of the most unlikely people. It is just unbelievable. We share testimonies about some things that have happened this year. And people stand up and they share, hey, the Lord worked in my life this year. And we have some people that have been delivered from drugs. And we have some people that have been greatly used at business and their place of employment in just phenomenal ways, you know, and just right out of the blue, not even expecting it. And we had lots of stories like that. And when you see the people that are telling the stories, and I'm not trying to put down on them now, because I mean I are one too, but you know they're just regular. I mean they're just regular people. It you look at them and there's nothing that would distinguish them to be greatly used by the Lord. And I have found in our church, I guarantee you that some of the most unlikely people have been the ones God has used the most. Some of the ones that really you would look at and say, there is no way God could use something like that. And my goodness, God will just bless them, bring people in, change people's lives, do all kind of mighty things through those that are the least expected. And that's the story of Gideon. Gideon is a farm boy that God uses to whip 135,000 Midianites. Imagine that. Midianites like locusts in the land of Israel. And here's little Gideon down in a well. Well, let's just read his story, all right? Let me just read you a few verses here. This is out of Judges 6. The story of Gideon, by the way, if you want to read it when you get home, is in Judges 6 and 7. He's one of the judges. The Israelites did evil in the Lord's sight. That wasn't unusual for them, was it? They seemed to all, you know, follow patterns of doing evil in the Lord's sight. For a little while, they would do good and God would bless them. I mean, here's the pattern, and I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but 13 times in the Old Testament, Israel went from being great to being in captivity, in bondage, 13 times. Now, I mean, really, think about that. You would think that maybe after about the eighth time, I mean, you know, I mean, give them seven, you know, before that. I mean, you would figure that they would know what was going on with this. And here's what would happen. God would bless them and they would prosper and they would be great. And then they would get cocky and proud and arrogant. And they would say, mine arm has delivered me. And God would say, you haven't learned a thing. And then God would allow them to be taken, and the Midianites and the Babylonians and the Assyrians and the Perizzites and the Aradites and the Termites and the Cellulites and all the ites. And they would just take them, and then they would be in captivity, and then they would cry out to God and they'd beg God, God, please deliver us. God. And after so many years, God's mercy would flow out and he would deliver them from the bondage they were in. And then they would get strong again and they would cry out to God, you know, you have delivered us. And then when they got strong again, they would say, mine arm has delivered me. God would say, all right, here we go again. And 13 times that happened in the Old Testament alone, 13 times. Oh my goodness, get a clue, man, you know. It's called the sin cycle. You ever been there? I mean, you know, we laugh at them, but I mean, good night. How many times have we been on the cycle? But anyway, so Israel did evil in the Lord's sight, so the Lord handed them over to the Midianites for 7 years. The Midianites were so cruel that the Israelites were made hiding places for themselves in the mountains and the caves and strongholds. Whenever the Israelites planted their crops, marauders from Midian, Amalek, and the people of the east would attack Israel, camping in the land and destroying crops as far away as Gaza. They left the Israelites with nothing to eat, taking all the sheep, goats, cattle, and donkeys. Pretty bleak picture, right? Well, we're not finished yet. These enemy hordes coming with their livestock and tents were as thick as locusts. They arrived on droves of camels, too numerous to count, and they stayed until the land was stripped bare. So Israel was reduced to starvation by the Midianites. Then the Israelites cried out to the Lord for help. When they cried out to the Lord because of Midian, the Lord sent a prophet to the Israelites, and he said, "This is what the Lord God of Israel says. I brought you up out of slavery in Egypt." Now look at what they're asking. They're asking, "God, deliver us from the Midianites." And what does God say to them? God said, "Look, I want you to remember what I've done for you, right? I've delivered you before. I brought you out of the land of Egypt. You said you were going to be my people, and you were going to obey, and you were going to walk in my commandments, and you were going to be my people. And here we are back again. Don't you remember that?" All right. But hey, I can do it because I did it once. I can do it again is what he's really trying to get them. "But you have not listened to me." Uh-oh. Wait a minute. "I rescued you from the Egyptians and from all those who pressed you. I drove out your enemies and gave you their land. I told you, I am the Lord your God. You must not worship gods of the Amorites in whose land you now live, but you have not listened to me." So what is the charge of God here? The charge of God is he blessed them, he brought them out, he took care of them, and then they made certain promises, but they didn't keep them. I hope that doesn't sound, well, don't point at him. I know I was started to say, does that sound like anybody you know? But then somebody kind of started pointing, and I mean, that's kind of tacky. Don't point them out, all right? You know, let them be anonymous right here, all right? But yeah, and this is rhetorical, so don't answer, all right? I'm not trying to embarrass anybody, but does that sound familiar to anything about us? Yeah. Yeah, how many promises have we made to God? How many things have we said we'd never do and we're doing it again? How many places we said we'd never go there again and we're going there again? Words we would never say and things we would never think and people we would never fool with and stuff we would never do and snort and shoot and all that, you know. I mean, and here we are, back again, crying out to God, saying, "God, just if you'll just do this one more time, God, you know, just one more time, Lord. I know I've been, you know, whacked out, and if you'll just do it one more time, God, I'll take advantage of it this time." And there was, "I'll do better. Yeah, I'll do better." And God said, "Well, you know, I told you not to go into that land and get casual about me and start worshiping their gods, but you didn't listen to me. You remember the first commandment? What is the first of the big ten? The first ten commandment is that you'll have no other God. I'm the Lord your God, and you'll have no other gods before me." What does that mean? It means no other gods before me. It means I'm number one. It means I don't play second fiddle. It means I don't come in behind anything. That I'm number one in your life. That I get your time. I get your attention. I get your focus. That I'm ahead of everything. See? And then here we come, and God falls way behind and lots of stuff back there in the dust. And then we have the audacity to be amazed when things just don't seem to be following through. Well, that's Israel. That's them. There they sat in the middle of defeat and no food and no land and 135,000 invaders invading their land and tiny little Israel, which is about from here to Wiggins wide and here to Jackson long. The whole country now I'm talking. The whole country. It's from here to Wiggins wide at its widest point, and here to Jackson, Mississippi long at its furthest point from north to south. That's the land, 135,000 Midianites, all camped out, plus all of Israel there, starving to death. Well, what to do? What to do? We don't have a leader. Well, who are we going to bring in? A supercharged superhero, wonderful person with a great personality that's just been waiting in the wings until we could have a time that he could be used at such a time as this? This magnificent person that would deliver Israel, that would be the champion and the hero and the great warrior and drive the Midianites out of our land. That's who we need. Well, that's not what God had in mind. God had in mind what God always has in mind. And that is, if you want to be used by God, all you have to do is make yourself usable. Now, do you hear me? If you want to be used by God, all you have to do is make yourself usable. And he'll wear you out. Yeah, he'll wear you out. Because the fields are always white, it's the laborers who are few. God has no trouble with the fields. He has trouble with the laborers. And God would use the most unlikely of all. How does God do this? First of all, and I know you saw this when I flashed the slide, so you go ahead and put it, fill in your blank. He will encourage me. When God comes to you, he will encourage you. How many of you here, and this is rhetorical also, so you don't have to raise your hand, how many of you need some encouragement? I mean, you're really just pretty flat, right? I mean, some of you are here at church today because it's been extremely discouraging over the Christmas holidays and New Year's, or maybe one of your resolutions, do any of you make resolutions anymore? You know, yeah. Maybe one of your resolutions was I'm going to get my spiritual life straightened out. I'm gonna get real in church. I'm gonna be there. I'm gonna do what I need to do, and maybe that's why. But the point is, we need some encouragement, and God speaks to us, and God encourages us. The first thing He does to us is He encourages our life. And let me just show you what happened with Gideon here. Remember, the land was barren, and God said, "You didn't do what I told you to do." Now, this is the very next verse. Then the angel of the Lord came, and I love this picture, really. Look how casual. Look how, just the angel just saunters up, you know. It's like he just kind of walks up, and he sits down under one of the trees there in Ophrah, yeah. And the angel of the Lord came and sat beneath an oak tree at Ophrah, which belonged to Joash of the clan of Abiezer. Gideon, son of Joash, had been threshing wheat at the bottom of the wine press to hide the grain from the Midianites. You know, remember, the other verses told us the Midianites came in there like a plague of locusts. You have some relatives like this, right? Yeah, they flew in there at Christmas like a plague of locusts, ate all the casserole and everything. Well, that's what was happening in Israel. And so Gideon was down in a well. He was down hiding from the Midianites, because if he did it out in the open, then they would see, and they would come take the grain and everything from him, and then they wouldn't have anything to eat. So here's Gideon, afraid of his own shadow. I mean, he's not really powerful. He's not really a leader. He's not really somebody that would be usable, he thinks, you know. And he's down in that wine press, treading out grains at the bottom. And look what happens. Then the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, "Mighty hero!" Now, I feel sure, but by some of the things he says in just a minute, that Gideon probably started looking around. Well, the first thing he did is he probably had to pick himself up off the ground, because he probably passed out. When that big voice said, "Mighty hero!" You know, and because he didn't have a lot of courage, and you'll see this in a minute, by what he says. And so he wasn't looking for a job, and the angel speaks to him. And the angel speaks, you know, one of the great things about being omniscient, God is omniscient. And if that word's not really like super familiar, just God knows everything. He has all knowledge. And being omniscient is a wonderful trait, because what it allows you to do is to know the end from the beginning. It means you know everything. So you know what's going to happen, and you know who's going to do it, and you know what's going to turn around and where what's going to come about. And so the angel of God which could possibly be Christ, an Old Testament figure of Christ, which happens in the Old Testament. It's called a theophany, when God actually visits earth personally. It's called a theophany. And a lot of the angels are perceived to be the Spirit of Jesus, the Spirit of God, the Holy Spirit, in an Old Testament carnation visiting the earth. But whether it is or not, this angel represents God, and this angel speaks for God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, "Mighty hero." Now, what the angel said is the truth. See, Gideon doesn't think this about himself. Gideon has a whole different understanding about who he is and what he is. He's not mighty hero. He's not mighty warrior. He's little old Gideon. He's the run of the family. He's the smallest tribe of Israel. He's the poorest people in all the land. He's the most unlikely candidate to be used by God that you would ever see in your life. That's what he would say. But when God speaks to him, God speaks the truth. God says, "You're a mighty hero," because God knows what you are. When God speaks to your life, he speaks the truth of what you are. And you're never what you are until God speaks it, you know? I mean, you are what God speaks, no matter whether you think you are or not, right? And so Gideon said, he says, "Mighty hero, the Lord is with you." And so this is quite a challenge, and Gideon's all whacked out. "Sir," Gideon replied, "if the Lord..." Now, I want you to notice when I read this passage, all right, look at all these words that are words of... apprehension. Look, these are words of doubt. These are doubtful words. When you start talking like this, it means whatever it is, you're doubting that. All right? Notice what he said. "Sir," Gideon replied, "if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? And where are all the miracles our ancestors told us about? Didn't they say the Lord brought us out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and handed us over to the Midianites." You see them? If, why, you know, but, where. Words like that are words that show, you know, you have a lot of questions about what has just been said. And so Gideon is here, and Gideon's saying, look, you know, if God was all of these things, then why isn't our life better? Why aren't things happening better for us in the land? And so then the angel of the Lord turned to him and said, "Go with the strength you have and rescue Israel from the Midianites. I'm sending you." Yeah, great strength, Gideon. He's thinking, great. Yeah, all right, wonderful, God. We'll get to that just as soon as I can get down the road just a little bit. Yeah, God, we'll make sure we get right to that and take care of that, and it's going to be some great strength for you. But the Lord... Gideon replied, "But Lord, how can I rescue Israel? My clan..." Look, here we go with the excuses. "My clan is the weakest in the whole tribe of Manasseh, and I'm the least in my entire family." Now, you have to admit he does have a point, right? Because if you know anything about Bible lands whatsoever, or you know any, if you've ever heard messages, a lot of them, a lot of David's messages about David has him... going to places like Ophrah. And it's a community. The name Ophrah means dusty. Means like dirty, dusty, dank kind of a place, you know. Does that sound like much of a place of promise, really? I mean, I'm from Ophrah. I'm from the place of dirt, you know. Yeah, yeah, that sounds promising, God. That's a wonderful place to be from, yeah. And my clan, I mean, my family is the smallest family of all of them, and I'm the runt of the family. So, God, what you're telling me is that you're going to use the runt son of the most unlikely family who lives in the most unlikely place of the most unlikely tribe in all the world. And God says, "Yes, mighty warrior, you're the one I'm going to use. And I want you to go in my strength. You're not going to have to go in your strength. You're going to go in my strength." And then he commissions him in verse 16. The Lord said to him, "I'll be with you, and you will destroy the Midianites as if you were fighting against one man." Gideon, I'm not asking you to go in your own strength. I'm asking you to go in my strength. That's what he's saying to him. Look, don't worry. I'm going to be with you. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to lead you. I'm not going to back out on you. I've got your back. I'm going to lead you. When the Lord sends you, the Lord goes with you, and the Lord takes you with him, and he is there with you. He does not leave you or forsake you. What is it that the word says? If God be for us, then who can be against us? I mean, if God is on our side, then how can any stand against God? So the first thing God will do when God begins to speak to your life so that he can begin to use you, unlikely you, is God will begin to encourage you first about the fact that he is your God. He won't leave you. You have the goods. He's going to be with you, and you're going to make it. You're going to be able to do what he says to do. Then here's the second thing. He'll meet you. God will meet you. In other words, God will come where you are. God will walk with you. God will be there by your side. God will stick closer than a brother. God will walk with you. Let me tell you. When Gideon realized that it was the angel of the Lord, he cried out, "Sovereign Lord, I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face." "It's all right," the Lord replied. "Don't be afraid. You'll not die." And Gideon built an altar to the Lord there and named it Jehovah Shalom, which means the Lord is peace. The altar remains in Ophrah in the land of the clan of Abiezer to this day. Now, what I want you to notice here is what Gideon did. When Gideon received that word from the Lord, immediately Gideon builds an altar. Well, what is an altar? Well, I know most folks say, well, an altar is what's at the front of a church. You know, it's got the nice little padded carpet, and some of them have kneelers on them, and some of them have rails, and, you know, I mean, it's the altar. It's right there at the front. Well, that's what we, those are altars we build. In these days, in the Old Testament days, an altar was a place of death. An altar was a place where a sacrifice was made, actually. And what an altar was a place where you had where your relationship changed with God. In other words, you bring your offering to the altar and you sacrifice it on the altar, making atonement for your sin, and now you have a relationship with God. So what happened at an altar is a change in relationship. And so when Gideon gets this word from the Lord, and then he sees this angel of the Lord, he said, "I've seen the Lord face to face." And the angel said, "Hey, don't worry about it. We're not going to kill you, you know, because you weren't allowed to see God's face. Moses taught us that, right? Remember the cleft of the rock and all that kind of stuff." But Gideon is all excited, and the first thing that Gideon does is he goes and he builds an altar. Now, we don't have the verses in between because, you know, there are several of them, but let me just tell you what happened in between. What happened in between was, Gideon, when he recognized it was the Lord, he ran home and he had some meat that he put in a pot, and he boiled the meat, and the meat, you know, produced some broth that was in the pot. And then he took some wheat and he ground it up, and he put some oil in it, and he made an unleavened bread cake. That's what he did. And then he ran back down there to the altar, which was just a flat rock, actually, sitting there, and he gave the stuff to the angel. And the angel said, "All right, put the meat there," and he put the meat on the little rock. And then he said, "All right, put the bread there." He put the bread on the little rock, and the angel said, "All right, pour that broth out right over there." I guess it wasn't really good, but anyway, he as soon as he did that, the angel touched it with his finger, and fire flew up and burned up the offering that was on the altar. And when Gideon saw that, Gideon said, "This place will be called God is Peace from now on." Now, the thing about that is that place was anything but peaceful, right? The Midianites were inhabiting the land. They were like a plague of locusts. There was no food. They were stifling and choking the people of God, and there was no peace in the land. But Gideon makes his choice, and Gideon says, "All right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going, even though there's no peace here, I'm going to proclaim that this altar is named Jehovah Shalom." How many of you have ever heard of the Jehovah names of God? I mean, you've been around, you've heard people say, you know, like Jehovah Rapha, my God heals, Jehovah Nisi, the God is a banner. There are nine Jehovah names, and Jehovah just means the covenant-making God, the God who makes a covenant with me. And then the word that follows is what kind of covenant you have. So Jehovah means the God who makes, and then Shalom means peace. So God to me is the God who's going to make peace in this troublesome situation, is what he said. God is meeting with Gideon and assuring Gideon that whatever Gideon needs to accomplish this purpose of God, God is going to meet it there. And even in the midst of no peace, God's going to bring peace. Is this possible? Well, if it's not possible, I wouldn't know what Jesus meant when he said in John 14, you remember John 14, the wonderful chapter where Jesus says, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, and I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place, I'll come again and receive you to myself." And the way you know, and Thomas said, "We don't know the way, and how can we?" And Jesus said, "I'm the way, the truth, and life." Well, just a couple of verses after that, Jesus says, "My peace I leave with you. Not as the world gives, give I to you, but my peace I give to you." Jesus identifying the fact that his peace was different from the world's peace. The world does give peace. It's just temporary, you know. It just has a lot of conditions attached to it. Yeah. The world can give you peace. I mean, I hear some of you say, you know, well, one of the real troubles that I have with people who are always trying to lead people to Christ is they're always talking about this horrible life that you're in and this horrible things that are happening to you and a horrible mess of life. And my life's really, you know, fairly decent, you know. Well, we have to admit, Christians, that life and sin, and I mean, there can be some peace. There can be some normalcy in all of that. It's not all just helter-skelter and terrible, but the only trouble with it is it doesn't last. That's the difference in it. Jesus says, so I'm not giving you the kind of peace that the world gives. I'm giving you the kind of peace that only I can give. And my peace will go with you. So Jesus meets with us. He encourages us and he meets with us. And then look at this. God will test me. Everybody that gets used by God gets tested. Look at your neighbor and say, "You're going to get tested." Yeah. Oh, yeah. Y'all really convinced me of that, I'm telling you. Let's try it one more time. Say, "God's going to test you." All right, that's a little stronger. Because that first one, I don't think you really believe that. Do you know that everybody God uses, he tests? Everybody God uses, he tests. He tests their availability. He tests their potential. He tests their abilities and their skills. And I mean, he tests all that stuff. Why would God do this? It's not because God needs to know. Remember, omniscient, right? Not that he needs to know. Is that right? He needs to show us. We need to experience these things so we can be assured that whatever we need, we have. Yeah, what the goods are, we got. And so God brings us through. And really, the tests of God are really like spiritual trainings is what they're really like. They're like God is building us and strengthening us and showing us and teaching us and leading us and encouraging our life that we're going to make it. This is going to be great. I'm going to be with you and you're going to be able to accomplish all of these things. But at the time, they're not really very fun because the test can be very difficult at times. Let me show you some tests of Gideon here. Let's just see if you can identify with any of this. That night, the Lord said to Gideon, "All right, take the second best bull from your father's herd." I guess the Lord had mercy on his dad and didn't take the best one. But the second best was probably a really good. He was a full-grown bull, and he was very valuable in the life of this family. So take the second best bull from your father's herd, the one that is 7 years old, fully adult, grown, pulls the plow, works hard, does all that stuff. Pull down your father's altar to Baal. To Baal? Yeah, see, this is one of the problems. Right here. This is one of the deals. You remember God told them, don't have any other gods before me. And when you go into this land, don't worship their gods. Don't take on their gods. Have you ever heard of gradualism? Has anybody here ever heard of that? Gradualism is that device that happens in our life where things happen so slowly, we just don't really notice them happening. But before long, there they are. You wake up one day and you've gone all the way from here to here and it happened so slowly that you didn't even know it was happening to you. Well, that's what happens in life. And so here's Israel in this land with all of these Assyrians and Midianites and all these people that worship Baal and all these other gods and so forth. And now it's slipped into their lives. And here is Gideon's dad of the tribe of Manasseh, one of the Jewish tribes that God brought into the land. And here, you know, here is Gideon's dad has an altar to Baal in his backyard. Before you can serve the Lord, you got to get the Baal out of your backyard, right? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Do we have any Baals in our backyard? Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, is there anything that comes before God? I mean, is there anything that you have to wrestle with to serve God? Is there anything that makes it more difficult for you to serve God? Well, those are candidates. That night, the Lord said to Gideon, take the best bull from your father, second best bull from your father's herd, the one that's 7 years old, pull down your father's altar to Baal and cut down the Asherah pole standing beside it. Now, the Asherah pole was a pole carved out of wood to the goddess Asherah, which was one of the Baal deities. And so she was there, and they had an Asherah pole and a Baal. Then build an altar to the Lord your God here on this hill, laying the stones carefully. Sacrifice the bull as a burnt offering on the altar, using as fuel the wood of the Asherah pole you cut down. All right, Gideon, here's your test. All right, you got to go down to Dad's house. And you know, Dad's got that big Baal sitting up in the backyard. Yeah. All right, and he's got that Asherah pole sitting right beside it. Yeah. All right, what I want you to do is I want you to take the second best bull he has, and I want you to go down there and pull that stuff down, turn over the Baal, pull him out of his place, take the Asherah pole, cut it up, hack it up, chop it up, and then build a fire, and then take the second best bull from your dad and kill him and offer him on the altar as a burnt offering to God. That's what, all right, yeah, and then that's the end of the test. Yeah, end of the test, end of my life. Go down to Dad's house and do all of that. Oh, man, what a test, what a test. So Gideon took 10 of his servants and did as the Lord had commanded. Notice this, but he did it at night. I mean, he wasn't totally foolish, okay? Let's go. But he did it at night because he was afraid of the other members of his father's household and the people of the town. He knew that he knew what would happen if they found out who had done it. All right, so here's the test. The first test you have is the spiritual test. God's going to test your spirit. God's going to test your courage in the spiritual area of life. And by this, you see the challenge of Gideon to go down to his father's house. Go down to where you grew up. Go back to your whole home. Go back to the people that practice these traditions that you grew up in. All of these traditions of Baal worship and all of the traditions of home, Gideon knew very well because Gideon grew up in this home. Gideon is from this home, actually. I'm not sure Gideon's not still living in this home at this time. And so what God's asking him to do is to break the traditions that he grew up in. Now, I don't know if you've ever tried to break the traditions that you've grown up in or not, but I'm going to tell you, that's not an easy thing. That is a very difficult thing. And there are people all over the place that say, I don't want to live like my parents live. But yet you have the same traditions they have. And if anybody tries to change those traditions, boy, you blow up real big. What you're really saying is, I want to be just like my parents were. And it's very difficult to go against the traditions that we've grown up with in life. That's why the Pharisees had so much trouble with Jesus, because Jesus broke all of the traditions that the Pharisees knew about the law of the land. And he did it with impunity, and he seemed to enjoy it. So he was charged to go down to Dad's house and challenge the traditions of life. He said, we're going to see what you're made of, Gideon. So the first thing God does is test us spiritually. The second thing God does is test us emotionally. Yeah, test those things that are in our life that cause us happiness and joy and fear. You know, breaking a tradition and breaking a family lineage and breaking those kind of things would be something that would bring a little bit of fear in your life and a little bit of anxiety in your life and challenge the emotions of life. And then let me just give you this third one real quick. The third, I'm going to have to get this thing back on. Hang on. Let's see if I can do it. Get me back on, Kyle. Can you get it? The third one, you can go ahead and write down this word, is physically. Physically. God tests us spiritually. God tests us emotionally. And then God tests us physically. And in the physical section of life, one of the riskiest things that God asked old Gideon to do was to tear down this altar, because there was a good chance he was going to be hurt in this thing. And I told you, we read in the scripture that he did it at night. And he did it at night because he knew how the people of the town were. How were the people of the town? The people of the town were very protective of this Baal statue. The people in the town came down there and worshiped at this Baal statue and this Asherah pole. And so there was a good chance that there was going to be some physical confrontation in this kind of thing. There wasn't just going to be something that you just slipped down there and did, and you had to deal with the spirituality of it, you know, tearing down an old spiritual issue in life, and then the emotional thing of going to daddy's house and upsetting the family and the old family tradition, that it actually might be dangerous, a physical danger to you, because those people were going to be very protective of this thing. And so Gideon had to face the fact that there were going to be repercussions. Yeah, consequences for his action. And was there? Well, let's see what happened. Early the next morning, as the people of the town began to stir, someone discovered that the altar of Baal had been knocked down. Can't you imagine an old boy out on a stroll early in the morning? Yeah, probably got his wife's poodle with him, you know. Taking her out for a walk, you know, that kind of thing. Trying to avoid everybody that might see him walking this little frou-frou dog. So he was back there behind the houses and stuff. And then all of a sudden he walks by Joash's house and he does a double take, because there used to be a Baal sitting right there. And now there's not a Baal sitting down there. And I'm smelling some fire burning, and it smells like some hair and some meat on that fire. And the Asherah pole's gone too, and it'd been knocked down, and that the Asherah pole beside it was gone. In their place, a new altar had been built, and it had the remains of a sacrifice on it. So Gideon built a new altar to God and made a sacrifice on it, which basically initiated the new altar. This was not an altar to Baal anymore. This was God's altar. The people said to each other, "Who did this?" And after asking around and making a careful search, yeah, they learned that it was Gideon, the son of Joash. Well, they still found out who it was. "Bring out your son," they shouted to Joash. "He must die for destroying the altar of Baal and for cutting down the Asherah pole." But look at what, I want you to see this. This is really encouraging to us. But Joash shouted to the mob. Now, Joash is Gideon's daddy. Joash is the one who has this Baal in the backyard. Joash is the one that's been leading probably the worship to Baal for the whole town for a long time. And he didn't have any conviction about that. He didn't have any plans to stop that. That was fine with him. But when his boy stood up and his boy did the right thing and his boy honored God, the God that had brought him out of all of that mess that they said they were going to worship and serve forever, all of a sudden, Dad, I think, gets under some conviction about this thing. I'm just telling you, you know, you may be the runt son in the poorest family in the most unlikely place in the world, but you've got some influence over somebody. Somebody will listen to you. Somebody's watching you. Somebody, if you get encouraged, they're going to get encouraged. If you get faithful, they're going to get faithful. If you turn toward God, they're going to turn toward God. You have some direct impact into their life. And look at what happened. Look at what happened to Dad when Gideon stood up to the people. And Dad said, "Hey, why are you defending Baal? Will you argue his case? Whoever pleads his case will be put to death by morning." He must have had a lot of pull in that town, right? Now, this is what I want you to see. Look at and think about this. If Baal truly is a god, let him defend himself and destroy the one who knocked down his altar. Which I say, that's right. Hey, I don't want to have to serve a God I have to protect. Do you? I want to serve a God that can protect me. Right? I'm not looking for a God who needs me to set him back up. who needs me to fight his battles for him, who needs me to keep people from mistreating him, right? I need a God who can keep people from mistreating me, who fights my battles for me, who, you know, I mean, that's the kind of God we have, right? And Dad says, hey, man, you know, if he's really who he says he is, he ought to be able to fight his own battles. Let him find the one who did it to him. And so God always tests. And you see how this test turns out that God has affected the entire, not only Gideon, but the entire family has been affected by these tests of God that are really training exercises, really, in all actuality. Let me give you one other thing. This is the last thing. God encourages you. God meets with you. God tests you. And then here's the last thing. After you pass the test, everybody look at your neighbor and say, you got to pass the test. All right, now this is really important. Now you got to pass the test. All right, yeah, I know there are a lot of people that want a lot of stuff from God. Don't pass the test. Not a single test. I've got a high school diploma. By the way, has anybody ever asked you to see your high school diploma? Really? Now, seriously, all right, somebody said yes, they had. But I haven't had this experience. And let me tell you, and I mean, I've had lots of jobs and stuff. I mean, I work, I'm a bivocational pastor. I work for big companies, you know, big industry, big 500 companies and stuff. And I've never been asked one time to see my high school diploma. Not one time. You know, you fill out the resume, you fill out the little form and all that, and you say graduated from high school. I graduated in 1974, which is a little while ago. And I know some of you are shocked. I can see it on your face. I look a lot younger than that, but I do have a few years on me, and anyway, I mean, don't let this baby face fool you. But I filled all that stuff out, and they've been waiting, you know, like they investigate all the stuff you had on there, you know, and they have the agency that does that and do all those things, and they do a background check on you and all your everything about your driving, all that kind of stuff, banking, everything. And I've had them say to me before, hey, we're waiting on one of your college transcripts, because I have about five of them. We've been waiting on. I couldn't keep a college. But I did. I graduated. My undergraduate was from Mississippi State. So Moo you, baby. Hey, we right there. I've had them say, we're waiting on a transcript because of college and blah, blah, blah. But I've never had anybody say, hey, man, you know, let's see your high school diploma. Like, I could just say I graduated from high school. They would never know it, because nobody ever checks on where you graduated from high school. But that's a big deal, right? I mean, I guarantee you that's a big deal. Try to get a job and not be a graduate of high school. It'll really stunt you, really. I mean, you really do need to graduate from high school to kind of, you know, move forward in a lot of ways, but jobs are one of the big ways that. But in order to get out of high school, what do you have to do? You got to pass some tests, right? Has anybody here graduated from high school and did not take a test? Oh, no. Oh, even the GED is a test, right? That's all a GED is. And if you don't know what that is, you probably have one. I'm kidding. Relax. I'm not trying to be mean, all right? But I'm just saying that we have to pass tests. And after you pass the test, then this kind of stuff happens. God will empower you. Now watch what happens here. Then the Spirit of the Lord clothed himself with Gideon. You know what that means? God put Gideon on like a jacket, like a sweater. I know that sounds a little freaky, but come on with me, all right? I mean, Think of the romantic poetry thought of that. I mean, don't get all technical about it. He puts on Gideon like a sweater, which means now God is working through Gideon. Gideon is attached to God. God is on the inside of Gideon, and Gideon's wrapped around God. So when the people encounter Gideon, they're not really encountering Gideon, they're really encountering God. And the Spirit of the Lord clothed himself with Gideon. He blew a ram's horn, similar to that. That's an ibex, which is an Israeli mountain goat. He blew a ram's horn as a call to arms, and the men of the clan of Abiezer came to him. And you know, you want to know what happened? Some of you probably already do if you've read the Bible very often and remember this story. But some of you hadn't, and it's really exciting what happened. When he blew that horn and all those men of that tribe came to him, guess how many it was? 32,000. 32,000. Now, you have to remember there were 135,000 Midianites, right? So we got 32,000 Israeli men against 135,000 Midianites. The odds are pretty rough. 4-1, something like that. All right. Now, so what you're saying, I know I hear you. What you're saying is, boy, Gideon needs some more people, right? Okay. That's what we would think because we think like humans think. We don't think like God thinks. God said to Gideon, Gideon, why you got 32,000? He said, well, I got 32,000 because they got 135,000. And God said, I think that's a little bit too many. And he said, really? Well, what do you want me to do? He said, here's what you do. You go down there and you get all those men together again and you tell them this. You say, all right, if you are afraid, then you can go home. If you're scared and you don't want to fight, you go home. You know how many of them went home? 22,000. Hey, man, 22,000 of them said, I don't want to die. 135,000 against 32, that sounds like the Alamo to me. You know, I mean, I don't want that. So they said, all right, I'm going back home to mama and honey and the children and all that. All right, so now he's got 10,000. He has 10,000 men against 135,000 Midianites. And God said, that's still too many, Gideon. And Gideon said, well, okay, God. I mean, hey, it's your business. And so what do you want me to do? Well, take them down to the creek and tell them to get down there and drink some water. And everybody that drinks water by taking water in their hand and putting it and lapping up while they keep their eyes looking out, you take them. But those people that stick their face down in the water and just drink, let them go home. You know how many he ended up with? 300. 300. All right, now we got 300 against 135,000. That's like 450-1. Terrible odds. And on top of that, here's the command that God gave them. Now, listen to this. All right, what I want you to do is I want you to get a lamp. An oil lamp, and I want you to get clay pot. I want you to get a shofar, which that's what this is right here. I want you to get you one of these. Get one of these, get a clay pot, and get a lamp, an oil lamp. And I want you to come up with me on the mountain. Now, I'm thinking, okay, sure, standard army issue, right? Every soldier fights with a shofar, a clay pot, and a lamp, oil lamp, right? So now not only do we have like 135,000 to 300 odds, we now have the weaponry of a shofar, a lamp, and a little bottle of oil. Okay, God, you come up on the mountain, and God tells Gideon, all right, surround, you know, get the 300 men, and put them in strategic locations so that they surround the Midianites down there in the valley, all of them. So you're going to, you know, I mean, they were pretty far apart because, you know, they were on mountaintops and they just scattered evenly all the way around the top. So now they're looking down there and he said, now here's what I want you to do. When I say go, I want every one of you to break, I want you to put the little oil lamp inside the clay pot. And I want you to get the horn in your hand and you break the clay pot. And of course, when you break the pot, light comes out. And I want you to blow that shofar loud. And I want you to say, the arm of the Lord and Gideon be upon you. Sounds like a plan, right? That's going to work. I know it is. It's going to work. Well, they did it. They broke that pot, blew that horn. Cried out, the arm of Gideon and the Lord are upon you. And the Midianites got so scared, they started killing each other down there in the valley. And what didn't die ran off and never came back again. With 300 men breaking a clay pot and a lamp and blowing a horn and shouting the arm of the Lord and Gideon. Unlikely strategy with an unlikely person. I mean, think of it. The guy who a week ago couldn't even lead a Bible school parade, is now leading the army of Israel to defeat the mighty Midianites in the land. So that's why I said, you might be saying, God might use somebody, but he can't use me. And I'm just saying, don't bet on it. God uses people just like you, just like me. All right, stand to your feet. Would you please just stand right there where you are and bow your head? Yeah, bless the Lord, bless the Lord. Yeah, just stand right there where you are. Glory to God.